Capital Investments Committee, March 5th. Will come to order. The first item on the agenda, the first bill is House File 3034, Representative from International Falls, Representative Eklund.
Good morning, Madam Chair. It's been a long time since I've seen you.
Not long enough.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 3034 is a bill that is critical to the 51 homes that have no outlet if there is a train derailment on the Van Lyn Road. This bill is critical to these residents. Train traffic has tripled in the last 10 years, and we are asking for $3 million for the grade separation. With me today is Dave Reimer, the Coochin County Highway Engineer, and he will explain some of the details on this project.
Mr. Reimer.
Good morning. Thank you. I've lived in this community for about 25 years, and I've seen the train traffic increase. It's almost tripled in the last 10 years. There are now 800,000 rail cars going through this community. On the one side of the train tracks,
A year, okay.
On one side of the train tracks is a community of about 50 homes that gets isolated whenever the train comes by. Because the train is coming from Canada and has to pass through customs, there's usually delays and the train slowed down. So on the average, that track is blocked about 6 hours a day with all the emergency services on the other side of the track. There's no outlet for these 50 homeowners. So if there ever was an emergency, they'd have to wait. There's been numerous derailments in the area within the last month. There was a 30-car derailment 25 miles north of there. You didn't hear about it too much because it was in Canada. They evacuated parts of the community there. This is the only way, this road and the overpass is the only way in and out of that area. Um, 30% of the rail traffic into the United States comes through this area. And comes across a single track lift bridge in Rainier, Minnesota. So the project's approximately $6.25 million. We're here asking today for $3 million. We met with you last fall, and we're still here asking.
Mr. Reimer, there's no other outlet for those people to get around, right? Nope. And they're stuck there then for 6 hours a day.
Well, the 6 hours a day that track is blocked. Now, if they're lucky, the train isn't there when they arrive at the track. If they're not, they're going to wait 15, 20, 30 minutes. And then at times, especially in the winter, last winter, there was a couple occasions where the train sat there for over a half an hour. School buses turned around without kids because the kids live on the other side. One of the school districts has refused to cross the tracks because they're worried about getting stuck on the other side of the tracks and missing picking up the rest of the kids on the route. So it causes numerous concerns. About once a month, you'll read something in the daily paper about how the trains block the tracks again. And, you know, up there in the winter and stuff, they have malfunctions. They have a switchyard there, so they have a bunch of loading, unloading. Customs is going through the cars usually, which causes more delays. And the average speed through this area where the train track is not high, which is a good thing, but it's a bad thing if you're waiting for a train.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Question, Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. When you were talking about the school buses not crossing the tracks and picking kids up on the other side so they don't get stuck, what happens then? Do they end up making a second route later in the day? Is the responsibility on the parents?
Mr. Reimer.
Bring them to school.
Thank you.
And usually the parents will take them to the edge of the railroad tracks in the morning when it's cold and wait for the school bus.
So they're not abandoned. Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Wolgamott. No.
Madam Chair, I move the minutes for the March 4th meeting.
Thank you. Has everyone looked at them and ready?
It seems so long ago.
It was, wasn't it? Representative Pearson. All in favor of accepting the minutes as printed, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. Representative Haley. Representative Earth, House File 3656. Representative Haley, thank you for coming. Thank you for, we went through this bill last year, and then we heard that there was no need for us to consider this bill, and now there's a need for us to consider this bill. So review the bill and the need and what happened in between.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and committee members. Would you like me to move the A1 amendment first, Madam Chair?
We're not moving amendments. The amendment is in your packet. You may speak to it, and we will consider it when we do the further consideration of all the bills that we're hearing today.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
And yesterday and last week.
Okay. I won't make comments. I'll allow my testifiers to speak to the questions that you have, Madam Chair and committee members. I'll introduce Evan Brown, president of our city council, and I also have Jesse Syme here today, general counsel for the Prairie Island Indian community, if there's questions arise that she needs to address. Thank you so much, and I'll turn it over to Mr. Brown.
Mr. Brown.
Thank you. My name is Evan Brown. I am the small correction vice president of the Red Wing City Council. And we want to thank Chair Murphy and the committee members for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 3656 and the rail grade separation at Sturgeon Lake Road in Red Wing. Sturgeon Lake Road is a busy four-lane roadway that serves as the only public access to the tribal lands of the Prairie Island Indian community. And its Treasure Island Resort and Casino Xcel Energy's Prairie Island Nuclear Generating Plant, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Lock and Dam Number 3 as well. Right now, there's a railroad crossing at street level that poses a significant safety risk. In fact, several years ago, this rail crossing was rated as one of the three most dangerous rail crossings in the state. In 2017, we were awarded $14.762 million to construct a road overpass crossing at CP Railway's main rail line at the Sturgeon Lake Road. This has been a priority for MnDOT and the previous governor. We have been unable to move the project forward due to the complexities of securing right-of-way for the project, as the overpass will land on tribal lands that currently are held in trust by the federal government for the Prairie Island Indian community. We have now entered into a memorandum of understanding with the Indian community for the necessary right-of-way. The cost for the project, however, has increased $10.588 million due to the project bidding environment, inflation, right-of-way costs, design changes, and other factors. Therefore, we are requesting this $10.588 million to fully fund and move this project forward. Last summer, to answer one question, with the support of MnDOT and our federal congressional delegation, we sought a federal build grant for the funds needed to complete this project. Late this fall, we were informed that no projects in Minnesota were funded and therefore we're asking for the money.
That's the problem, Representative Haley, is that we were told that we were going to get that money and then we didn't get that money.
Exactly. We do have an opportunity, Madam Chair, to reapply. But we've talked to the folks that manage those grants and been told that we are not near the top of the list. And that's why we had to make the decision to come back and ask this committee for additional funding so we can move forward.
Okay. And are we led to believe that the $14 million is still there, or the $14-plus million is still there?
Yes, Madam Chair, we would.
And this is
part of this bill would
to
extend.
That $14 million.
Exactly. Right.
Please proceed. Oh, that's it.
Well, I would just say that we consider this project really urgent as a safety issue. Currently, the rail crossing is traveled by 12,500 cars on average a day, plus we have 40 trains on average that pass by in, carrying crude oil, ethanol, and other dangerous hazardous substance. So, you know, a street level crossing at this, with all these different entities, it just needs to be raised. So the safety issue is a huge issue for us in our city. With that, I want to thank you for your time, and we are happy to answer any questions you might have.
Ms. Sine, do you have anything to add to what's already been said? Could you talk a little bit about that memorandum of understanding?
Certainly. Good morning, Chairwoman and Council members. As was mentioned, I'm Jessie Simon. I'm General Counsel for the Prairie Island Indian Community. And I've had the pleasure of working with the city on this matter for about 4.5 years now. And this project actually extends much further back, but that's when I got to Prairie Island. And we've been diligently communicating and working to get this a reality, but as was testified to, there have been some complications or additional work that needs to be done when we're talking about right-of-ways and easements over tribal land. As you know, that land is owned by the federal government, but in trust, so the beneficial ownership is with the tribe. But to get those accesses, and especially when we're talking about a permanent issue, we have to comply with federal laws. 25 CFR 169 is what governs this issue, and so we have to check off a lot of boxes. And so we worked on that. We initially had thought that there was going to be a land swap, and at the time, I believe in 2017, when this the first bonding bill occurred, that land swap was on the table. The negotiations and the realities since evolved. So the parties did reach a memorandum of understanding that we're all happy with and would like to go forward. I do want to say that this is a project of critical importance for Prairie Island. In speaking to tribal council members that have been on council for 20 years now, this has been something they've been working on for just that long. You know, it is the city's road. It is not the tribe's road. So it's not something they can single-handedly take care of, but you have community members, you have elders, you have the economic lifeblood of the tribe with the casino there, all of the things that the tribe depends on greatly. And you know, we have the nuclear power plant, which Xcel has become a good partner of the tribe, but there's always risks involved. And should something happen, and should that roadway be blocked, the only way on and off, that is a devastating situation for this tribe and its members. So the tribe does feel that this is a critical issue for the health, safety, and welfare of its members and of the greater community, the Xcel workers, the visitors. And we certainly recognize that this is not ideal to come back with the issue that's presented to you, but I do want to confirm that the parties have been working in good faith together to resolve this issue that's important to all of us. So thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just going to guess that the amendment has something to do with removing Moorhead and references to Moorhead in the bill.
Madam Chair?
No.
Maybe you're.
Haley.
Madam Chair and Representative Considine, my amendment just adds language about right-of-way acquisition. It does not have anything to do with Moorhead. Perhaps there's another amendment.
Your amendment is 6A.
Okay, yeah, I saw that one.
6A1?
Yes, ma'am.
Never mind, we'll work that later on. Thank you.
Oh. I understand that's previous language in the statutes.
Thank you, Park.
It doesn't have anything to do with today's language. Thank you. Any other questions? Statements. Ms. Brown, give us an idea of who would you be using this passageway over? Through the road, is there a bike lane on it? Is there a pedestrian lane on it? Is it just for cars?
Well, it's a primary access to the tribal community, so it's all the traffic in and out, all the traffic for the community itself, all the traffic in and out for the casino, and also a lot of traffic for the lock, obviously the lock and dam and the nuclear generating plant. There is not a lot of, there are walkways and trailways alongside the road, so that additionally exists. I think the majority of the traffic will be fundamentally road traffic.
So this basically, it's not like an overpass. It's basically the road that's going through now being extended.
The new, it will be an overpass. It will, so that right now the crossing is at street level. So if there are rail cars or if there were a derailment at the crossing, that would cut the access to Prairie Island.
But it's going to be more like a road than a passageway.
Madam Chair, it is a rail grade overpass.
Yes.
It's not extending the current road. The problem is the current road gets blocked by these trains carrying crude oil, and about 12,500 cars use that road every single day. So it is an overpass, so we don't risk a safety situation with a nuclear power plant, tribal members and tourists being trapped basically on the island.
Thank you for that clarification, Representative. Anything else? Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Representative Fabian, House File 3193. Please begin.
Good morning, Chair Murphy and committee members. We're here this morning to make a request for the Carlstead Airport runway. Carlstead is a town of about 700 people in the furthest northwest corner of the state, not too far from Hallock, Madam Chair. And I'll let my testifier explain the project just very quickly. In a town of 700 people, you don't have a whole lot of tax capacity and you don't have a lot of opportunity to raise a lot of capital. And the number of economic opportunities that come along are fairly limited, and I'd like Mr. Lundin to explain this project.
Mr. Lundin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Al Lundin, the volunteer chairman of the Carlstead Airport Commission. I appreciate the giving us the time to testify today. I'm hoping you'll support us in House File 3193. I appreciate the Representative Fabian and his work in getting us this far. Carlstead is a small community in far northwestern Minnesota, 30 miles from Canada, 30 miles from North Dakota. Those of us in rural Minnesota, of course, rely on a robust transportation system for health care, recreational travel, public safety, and commerce. Today, we're generally limited to highway travel. There are no bus or rail options. However, in northwest Minnesota, we are fortunate to be a vibrant agricultural area and be blessed with a lot of innovative people in manufacturing. Within 60 miles of us, is Polaris in Roseau, DigiKey in Articat, and Thief River Falls, my friend sitting behind me. Marvin Windows in Waro, Central Boiler in Greenbush, and Matrax of Carlstead, which is a worldwide distributor and manufacturer of track systems. Most of the large businesses rely on air travel every day at their at the adjacent airports. Right now, Carlstead has a small grass landing strip that was built in 1953 that doesn't meet the needs of our businesses, public safety, or health. It's 2,600 feet long, about a half a mile, only for the smallest recreational aircraft. It's in a chronically wet, unusable area most of the time of the year, and constrained by major power lines on two sides and a state highway on the south side. So you may ask, why do we need a new runway? Commerce is the driving factor today. We have Kicking Up Country, a music festival in Carlstead with thousands of attendees. We have Wickstrom Telephone, where I work, that's my day job, as we had an aircraft that we used for doing IT and consulting work around the state, which we sold a couple of years ago because the runway wasn't reliable. And we're investing in our area. We're in the middle of a $40 million upgrade project of fiber to the home in northwestern Minnesota. Greenway Environmental is one of our other businesses in Carlstead. You may have this picture of a tracked vehicle that does hydro excavating. That business is based in Carlstead. They work around the country doing utility work with a high-pressure water vacuum system to locate telephone, natural gas, power, but most of their work is actually repairing gas and oil pipelines. And with the track systems that are built by Matrax on that vehicle, they're allowed into environmentally sensitive areas. So those are just a couple of the things that we'd like to do. Matrax, they currently have four aircraft that are based in other locations. They do business in 140 countries. They started in their first overseas venture was in the United Arab Emirates in 97, provide product to all the branches of the military, do research projects for the Department of Defense. They also have been in six Hollywood movies with their products, so it's kind of a fun business to have in town. No airport restricts their travel for sales, maintenance, and access to the people from the Department of Defense. The next need we see is agriculture. My son is a farmer in northwest Minnesota. Challenging weather and field conditions require aerial spraying of chemicals to protect their crops. So an airport would be certainly helpful to have one closer to his crops. Healthcare. Every small town, of course, will benefit from having a fixed-wing aircraft capability for healthcare and delivering people to bigger airports with bigger hospitals. Public safety. 2012, we had a devastating fire in the city of Carlstead, where it took the DNR, the National Guard, and a dozen area fire departments to help extinguish that fire. Having an airport that had the ability to bring in other aircraft, refuel, and add water to those aircraft would certainly have been helpful. So you may ask, what have we done so far to find a solution? MnDOT Aeronautics was our first stop in 2017. We met with them to discuss budgets, maintenance, engineering projects, how we get to getting a better airstrip. 2018 and 2019, MnDOT Aeronautics appropriated several grants to us for doing a feasibility study, environmental review, an airport layout, zoning ordinance, and they've been a great help. Unfortunately, MnDOT has limited funds for capital projects. That they only get funding from aviation fuel tax, sales tax on aircraft, registration fees. They don't have a lot of money to help us try and build a new airstrip. The City of Carlstead budget, like Representative Fabian mentioned, is small. It's about $600,000 a year, and we spend $5,000 to $8,000 on maintaining the current airport. Not a lot. So summary, our businesses indicate to us they want to add up to 100 new jobs in the next 5 years with a new airstrip. Matrax has committed to a $5 million expansion of his business and hiring 50 new employees. The direct impacts that we see are in your packet of about $1.7 million annually towards the area around Carlstead. And I'd like to give you a little bit of reference with that. With MnDOT's latest study, just came out last week, shows the area airports, for example, Hallock, that generate about $3 million worth of annual activity from their airport. Stephen, about $3.3 million. Even Warren, $1.8 million without a major manufacturer in town. So Carlstead, they show us generating about $100,000 in economic activity with our small grass strip. So we're hoping you'll help us fund this infrastructure investment in far northwestern Minnesota. I appreciate your time.
Representative Fabian, what's the total amount of the runway that he's talking about, Mr. is talking about?
Madam Chair, the request in the bill, excuse me, is for $12 million.
And that's the total cost of the runway?
Yep.
What's your
for acquisition of land, pre-design, design, engineering, and construction of the primary airport runway.
Okay. You don't have the land already? You don't have an airport now?
We have an airport. It's about a half a mile long. It's a grass strip, and it's constrained on two sides with major power lines that can't be moved, and a state highway on the south side. We'd like to move it a couple miles south of Carlstead. That's the engineering study by MnDOT showed us.
But you don't have the land yet?
We don't. We haven't acquired the land.
Do you have a match?
Well, the local match is... Here's what we're looking at. We think the total project is going to be about $18 million. MnDOT, we've talked to them about doing a match on the fuel system, hangars, a taxiway, doing a match on that part. We're asking for more funding to help us buy the land and build the TAR airstrip.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So as I'm looking at this, it's really not the extension of an existing runway. You're creating a whole new airport.
Correct.
And, you know, if I remember correctly, Representative Erdahl or Representative Torkelson, I mean, a few years back, didn't we have a conversation about these small regional airports and about how we should fund them? You know, maybe it was some dream I had, but I thought that was a significant conversation at one of our bonding committee meetings. If one of you could speak to that.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Dean. I'm glad you're dreaming about rural airports. That warms my heart. We have the airport fund, but the money generated by that really is not enough for these major capital projects. It's used mostly for, you know, improved runway lighting, improved security, things like that. So the demand for airport funding far exceeds the funds available in the airport fund, and that's why we see these projects coming forward.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, we've had, you know, we have general conversations over the years you know, what we should do with funding airports, and Representative Torkelson gave a good explanation of, you know, the fact that they do have a fund in transportation, but it's not adequate to cover the types of things that we're being asked to do. So you know, we're in the same situation that we are with many of this type of thing. You know, do we jails, courthouses, airports? You know, what do we do in terms of? How much we're going to spend and what we have available and what we prioritize.
Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Lundin, you said that the economic impact with the existing grass runway airport is measured about $100,000 and other airports in the area in the millions. Do you have an estimate of what the economic impact of Carlstead would be with this new airport runway?
Madam Chair, Representative, the MnDOT Aviation did that study for us and with Bolig, and they estimated the first years being about $1.7 million a year.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Lehman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize if you've already answered this. I didn't catch it. How far away is the closest airport to Carlstead?
Mr. Lundin.
Madam Chair, members, the closest airports are Hallock is about 30 miles away, and the Thief River Falls Airport is a little over 40 miles away.
Follow-up question. I love this picture. This is really awesome. I could see this in a movie. Yeah, like Star Wars or something. So can you talk about the challenge? I mean, is it expedient? Can you get this equipment 30 miles to the airport, or have you? What? How has this company been using the existing airport? I guess is my question.
Madam Chair, members, the existing airport, they can't use the transport up in Carlstead any of the equipment that's on here. They've generally been transporting it to Grand Forks, where there's cargo aircraft, or if it's for the Department of Defense, they'll bring it to the air base in Grand Forks.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Torkelson, can you help me out a little bit?
I would love to.
Does the DOT have a list of priorities, like the PFA list, kind of?
I'm going to phone a friend, Madam Chair, because I can't remember. They have a airport. They have a person that takes care of the airport fund, and I can't remember if there's a priority list or not. Perhaps Mr. Lee remembers, because he is a very sharp person.
Oh, Mr. Lee?
Madam Chair and Representative Torkelson, I'm not sure that MnDOT maintains a list. I think that the agency might need to speak to that. But I know that within the state airports fund, there are a few revolving accounts specific to hangars, air navigational aids, and operations support. And as background context for the committee, the State Aeronautics Fund is a fund that is that generates money from taxes on aviation fuel, air flight property tax, and a registration tax for aircraft in the state.
Is the agency here? Is a representative from the agency here?
There she is. You're hiding back there.
Thank you for coming up. Could you explain how you help and encourage? And I'm thinking of an airport near to my district that's just been closed. And so now we're talking about another airport about the same amount of
Certainly, thank you.
And so could you help us with these question kind of things, just briefly?
Absolutely. My name is Cassandra Isaacson. I'm the aeronautics director for MnDOT. And there is a state airports fund. It's around $24.7 million a year, as it was identified, the taxes that come from that. With that funding, we do a variety of things. We support airports. We own navigational systems statewide, so a few million dollars goes to operating and maintaining that. Whenever you hear on the morning broadcast, wherever you live in the state, and they say the temperature at the airport is, that's almost always equipment that is owned and operated and maintained by MnDOT. We also provide funding to airports for maintenance and operations, so we give annual maintenance and operations grants to 132 of the 133 public airports in the state. We don't give MSP a maintenance and operations grant. They have a lot of other sources of revenue, but so every airport gets some funding for the maintenance and operations costs, so things like snow plowing, grass mowing, utility bills, that sort of thing. And then we also do participate in capital projects. The 70% of the 133 airports are eligible for federal funding, and so we participate in the local share of those federal projects. And then those 30% of the airports, like Carlstad, that receives no federal funding, we try to help them as much as we can. And as has been mentioned, the larger capital projects, and I believe you'll be hearing from some additional needs further on in the hearing today, it's really hard for us to reach some of those larger investments. We work really hard to maximize the amount of federal money coming into the state, and by the time we've participated in that and done those other things, those capital projects where it's just us and that local unit of government is challenging. About half the airports in the state are owned by cities with a population of less than 5,000 people. So for many of those communities, that little bit of money we can give them for maintenance and operations and our participation in their capital projects, whether it's the purchase of land, the planning process, all of that, is really the thing that can make the difference for that community.
And Ms. Isaacson, then do you weigh in, or in your studies, do you weigh in of how that new airport would affect the established airports in the region?
Generally, for us, we don't. There is a state law tells us how many has kind of a cap on the number of airports that can be in the system. And so as long as we haven't exceeded that cap, and we haven't, then we continue. If a community chooses aviation, we partner with them in that. As to the previous question, too, in terms of maintaining list, yes, we do. So we require every airport in the state. We ask them to put together what we call a CIP, their capital improvement plan. We encourage a 20-year CIP so that we can see their projects, not just for this next year, but going into the future. We prioritize those projects on an annual basis and issue grants based on that scoring system. We have a scoring system we use to rank the projects, and then our participation, our financial participation, does look at the size of the community and some of those kinds of things too.
Could you share some of that material with this committee for the Northwest regions?
Yes, absolutely. We'll provide that.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Salt.
I'll pass.
Representative Grossel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess my question, you mentioned that fire and the public safety aspect of it. What's the closest airport where those water bombers would be able to go to, you know, as far as getting back to the scene, going back and resupplying, refueling? And then for the DOT lady here, how do you get off that? How do you get out of that 30% that's not, can't be federally helped?
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm not sure other than Thief River Falls where you can refuel and put water in a helicopter, that's about the closest spot, 35 miles away.
Ms. Isaacson.
Madam Chair, as part of that prioritization that we do every year, so we estimate how much of the money we have available for capital projects, what percentage of that budget will need to go to the federal projects, and then with what's left, we prioritize. Some of those airports get standalone state projects, but the 30% of airports that don't receive federal money, they're in the mix as well. What we do with them, so for example, an airport that receives a federal grant, they're receiving 90% federal funding for their project, and then on average, we're kicking in about 5% state money, and then there's 5% local. But if there's an airport that doesn't receive federal funding, what we do is we put in around 90 or 95% state money and 5% local. And so it's a way of treating the airports equitably across the system.
I guess my question was, they're not eligible for federal funding. How do they become eligible for federal funding?
Isaacson.
Madam Chair, there's an application process to be included in what is called the NIPIUS. It's the system of airports that receive federal funding. And so they would have to apply to FAA. FAA looks at a wide variety of factors to determine if they will allow an airport to be included. And so it is a lengthy process, but the first step in that, there's only a handful of turf airports across the country that are included in the NIPIUS. There's no way they could be included today. If they were to relocate the airport and do this expansion, they could make that application at that time.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House File 3465 is a project that you heard last fall, I believe, down in Virginia.
So tell us how it's changed.
The $2 million we're requesting will be leveraging $38 million of FAA funding. We just had a pretty lengthy conversation about how that works. And there will also be $400,000 put up by the City of International Falls in the Coochin County for the local match to finish runway upgrades that are needed. With me today is Thor Einerson, the manager of the International Falls Airport, to explain the details of this bill.
Mr. Einarsson.
Yes, ma'am.
Welcome.
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, fellow committee members, thank you for the opportunity to address you today. Cochin County and the City of International Falls jointly own and operate the Falls International Airport. The airport is embarking on a four-year improvement plan to replace its main runway, 1331, and the parallel taxiway. The present runway and taxiway are 7,400 feet in length. Falls International Airport is a regional airport with daily commercial air service to the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport and one of four international airports, meaning a port of entry in the state of Minnesota that's available 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, tremendous amount of European traffic from the Pacific Rim over the top, we call it over the top, over the North Pole, comes to our airport, clears customs, fuel, potable water, catering lab, et cetera. We call it a tech stop in aviation terms. Falls International Airport is a critical piece of infrastructure in our county and city, serving the Packaging Corporation of America paper mill, Voyageurs National Park, Rainy River Community College, Rainy Lake and Capitogamal Lake Resorts, and northern regions of Minnesota. The airport served over 32,000 commercial passengers and international flights, originating in Korean, Middle Eastern, Canadian, and European airports in 2018 alone. Cochin County and International Falls have experienced a loss of over 300 manufacturing jobs, paper mill, board mill, pallet mill in the past 6 years, and the FAA has designated both as a distressed county and city, thus eligible for 95% federal funding on this project. We are requesting funding support for the non-federal share of the phases 2 through 4, or $2 million, to help our community make the necessary improvements to maintain commercial air service to a region that vitally needs it. International Falls has already funded in excess of $1.5 million locally for a new terminal building. The majority of the commercial service runway is now over 40 years old. We have been patching and filling cracks every year for more than two decades. The bituminous surface is crumbling and in need of replacement. Federal Aviation Administration and the Minnesota Department of Transportation, Office of Aeronautics, approved the project, which will begin this calendar year with 1,000 feet of both the runway and taxiway being rebuilt. The county and city have accepted responsibility for the local share of over $300,000 of spending for the 2019 Phase 1 construction project and design and environmental costs of the Phase 2 and 3. Please see the attached project cost estimates 2020 through 2022. It's in your package, ladies and gentlemen. In 2017, the Airport Commission, with full support of the MnDOT Aeronautics and the FAA, embarked on a planning study, which evaluated the existing pavement conditions at the airport and charted the course for a four-year expansive pavement reconstruction of its main commercial service runway and parallel taxiway. The study evaluated to minimize the economic impact of these projects and developed the following proposal. The Airport Commission has invested over $300,000 of local funding to the sources to complete the initial phase of this project, and including the planning study, Phase 1 design and construction, numerous environmental studies, property acquisition, and Phase 2 design. In closing, the planning study completed by the Airport Commission has developed an accurate and comprehensive capital improvement plan to complete the proposal infrastructure improvements without jeopardizing the lifeline of the economic activity that uses the Falls International Airport. Thank you for considering our funding request as we maintain an infrastructure at the airport with our state and federal partners, create hundreds of construction-related jobs, and cement a future for the economic growth in the northern region of the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Eklund. I'm just thinking back when last this committee heard about International Falls, we were up north and had a great presentation by your former mayor, Mr. Anderson, and just want to send my condolences. I really enjoyed serving with him on Lazard Sam, and he was a good steward for the state of Minnesota all over, but sorry about your loss.
Yes, sir. Thank you. It's a huge gap for us. Unfortunately, the evening after he was at the committee meeting, he called me very excited about the possibilities, and tragically, he passed 2 days later. So, but thank you for that, sir.
Thank you very much. Representative
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Thank you, Mr. Hedrick, for coming. And just tell us what's changed or what progress you've made since we visited with you in that hangar. And we're going to make up a couple minutes.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate the committee coming up to Thief River Falls. And I know we need to be expedient, so I will let Mr. Hedrick explain the project and the changes.
Welcome again, Mr. Hedrick.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. It's a pleasure to be here and speak with you. Also have in attendance the Mayor of Thief River Falls and Chairman of the Authority, Don Jensen, and Brian Homer.
Thank you for coming down.
What has changed as this process evolves? The FAA has funded a master plan study. We have completed the environmental piece of the review of where the hangar is going to be situated. So we're confident in our placement there. Also, as big news, as previously mentioned, the state came out with an economic impact that shows that the annual economic impact for the airport is $9 million. But more importantly, the study came with a tool, a calculator, that you can put input costs of your construction projects and output the economic impact of that capital outlay. So with an $11 million total package, we get $21.5 million of direct and induced economic impact out of this project. Previously, we had presented this to you as a 90-10 split. That was a marketing error on our point, where we were just looking at the ineligible FAA ineligible items, namely the building. When you talk and you look at the entire project, the apron, the lighting system, all of the site work, the master plan study that comes before all of the development, we're talking about an $11 million project. We are asking for the same amount, $6.75 million, and that leverages over $4 million of non-state money for the project and has a great economic impact for our community, sustains growth, and continues the partnership that we have seen from this body in years past with prior constructions of similar buildings. And so we would also like to thank you very much for your prior commitments and prior partnership with us.
And so your ask again is 6.7?
6.75 million.
Representative Erdahl.
thank you, Madam Chair. And when we were up in Thief River Falls, we noticed there are some large commercial companies that utilize the airport. And I could have asked this question of other airports as well, if they have larger commercial users, but thought I'd save the question for you. Is there any contribution made by those who utilize the airport to such a great extent?
Mr. Hendrick.
Representative Chair, Madam Chair, Representative, not a direct contribution. Their contribution is to the community at large, hiring over 3,500 people in a town of 8,500, also with a $400 million infrastructure, a new facility in Thief River Falls. They see that as their investment. They're not in the product distribution business. They pay for that through larger cargo carriers, and those cargo carriers are also not willing to make the upfront capital investments. They'll pay a lease.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hedrick. Representative Keel for the update, and we'll hold this over for possible consideration.
Thank you.
Further consideration.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The airport parade continues. Before I turn it over to my testifier, I just remind everyone how important airports are to the state of Minnesota. You know, we have an award-winning international airport right here in the Twin Cities, but that airport would not be able to do its work without the surrounding airports in the region that help it do its work well. And I encourage you to depend on DOT's airport office, because they are very capable of explaining some of these details, not at this time, but in your office, Madam Chair. And I'd like at this point to turn it over to my testifier.
And who is?
I'm Jim Deering, Public Works Coordinator for the City of Redwood Falls.
Thank you, Mr. Deering. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm here with Silas Parmar, our airport engineer with Bolton & Mink Incorporated, for any technical questions. We'd like to thank the committee for hearing us again for today and for your earlier stop out at Southwest Minnesota State University last October. And we'd like to thank Representative Torkelson for authoring House File 3111. On behalf of the City of Redwood Falls Municipal, we are requesting $2.128 million to complete a full depth payment reclamation, the reuse of the airport payment, which includes runways 12 and 30. The apron areas, and with a final grooving of the finished runway to enhance traction. In addition to the project, it also includes replacing the old incandescent runway lighting to LEDs and a stormwater drainage improvement due to the increasing rainfall volumes and intensities we've been experienced down in Redwood Falls areas. Please refer to your handout. I believe that was in your packet today. And it has our project scope included, and what our ask for is on it. The total project cost for the project is $5.516 million. An additional $3 million is being tasked to FAA funding, and a $338,000 local match is anticipated. The question has been asked today, why are we not making the request to MnDOT Aeronautics instead of through House File 3111 and Senate File, the companion Senate File 2929. There are two reasons. First and foremost, as you've heard today, MnDOT Aeronautics for state fiscal year 20 and state fiscal year 21 has appropriation of $9.5 million statewide for airport development and improvements. Cassandra referenced $24 million in total. There are, as Cassandra said, there's 133 publicly owned airports in Minnesota which receive MnDOT funding. I think she said 132. State fiscal year 20 alone has over $38 million in project requests. And there's only about $4 million available. Secondly, this is a unique multifaceted project combining pavement rehabilitation, lighting conversion, and stormwater control, resulting in construction and cost efficiencies. Breaking these projects out separately would span well over a 15-year capital improvement plan. With continued rising costs due to inflation, we're taking a one-and-done approach with this conglomerate project. The final question to answer is, why is the City of Redwood Falls Airport so vital to invest $2.128 million? As you've heard before, MnDOT has come out with their statewide impact study, economic impact study, and I'm going to quote some things out of that. I'm going to pull back to 10,000 feet, refer back to these 133 publicly owned airports. These airports are, according to the study, are supporting 94,000 jobs, affecting $4.4 billion in payroll, and results in $13.8 billion in spending, with an overall $18.2 billion in state economic activity. District 16 in total benefits to the tune of $60 million of economic activity due to aviation. Redwood Falls Municipal Airport is one of the study airports for the report. The municipal airport alone affects 68 full-time employee equivalents, affecting $4.4 million in payroll, yielding $3.7 million in spending, with an overall impact of $8 million in economic activity. Redwood Falls Municipal is the gateway to the City of Redwood Falls, Redwood County, District 16, and the state. We ask for your support with House File 3111, and thank you for your consideration. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Representative Salk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I sit here and I'm going to bubble over if I don't say this, so I got to get it said. We are, as a state, looking past one of the most important economic development features of our whole state. We have, just in my 2 years being here, I've sat through a number of small towns and cities, small airports that have come to us wishing that they could somehow improve, somehow they could meet the demand for service that they know exists and they're being asked to do. And we continuously decide that the number is just too big for us to get up in the morning and do. I'm sorry, we need to start doing that, because if any of you just imagine what it's like to completely underfund your household by, let's say, some odd number, let's take 10%. That's a conceivable thing. Your household will wither up for lack of cash flow for keeping it going. So, yes, this is a sermon. I'm on my way out, and I will tell you that I cannot get this resolved in the next 4 months. But you can, as an industry here, we can create a place for small airports to routinely know they're going to get the kind of support. I agree that the current DOT office does wonderful work.
Very much so.
But not close to what the economic impact of a robust rural airport system would be. And I'm coining that word. I hope they don't take offense to how I've classified the small airports across the state. But that is an incredible important part. Our development as a state is the small. Remember this, these things that we say? Small business is the heart of la, 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 la. Yet here we sit and we don't fund a core aspect of being a small business. So there's your boost. I know that Representative Torkelson will take that and leverage it into great and important things in the future.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And members.
Representative Wolgamott. And we're going to cut a couple minutes off of your time, too.
Right.
Because we've been there.
Here.
It's not quite that narrow.
Oh, you have someone joining you. Okay. Please begin.
Thank you, Madam.
House File 4017.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm here to present House File 4017, seeking $3 million in general obligation funds and $3 million in a general fund appropriation to continue the work that's being done to bring the North Star Rail to St. Cloud. Madam Chair and members, this is not the first time you've heard of this project. You've been to the train depot in St. Cloud. I want you all to know that we are abiding by the one presenter rule, but there are people in the audience here who came from St. Cloud to share their support for this important project. But for this morning, Madam Chair, I have with me from the Minnesota Department of Transportation, Frank Letterly, who is the project manager. He's here to give you the full nitty-gritty details of the bill, and then, Madam Chair, we'll be more than happy to stand for any questions.
We don't need the nitty-gritty details of the bill because we've heard the nitty-gritty. We want to know about changes and progress, and we do understand that people are writing us emails, and I read them at 1 o'clock this morning, and so I will continue to do so. But Mr. Letterly.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. As you know, the legislature appropriated $650,000 during the 2019 session to assess the for assessment, analysis, and review of the project to extend North Star Commuter Rail. We, MnDOT and Metro Transit, convened a project management team. We interpreted our mandate fairly narrowly, basically looking at figuring out how we could actually move, physically move trains between Minneapolis and St. Cloud. We also felt that it was extremely important to involve BNSF right from the gate, and so we have been talking very closely with BNSF, and we believe that at the end of this process, and I can't speak for the railroad, but we believe that we will have three service alternatives that can reliably provide commuter rail service between Target Field Station and St. Cloud. These alternatives range from very, very minimal service to a very robust schedule.
And, of course, that assumes the implementation of specific infrastructure requirements, equipment, and single improvements. And we also intend to provide the capital operating and maintenance costs associated with these three service alternatives. So I was asked what do we do next? And so the bill before you talks to what needs to happen now. And the first and foremost, we need to develop and implement a robust and continuous stakeholder and public involvement program. We need to develop and memorialize roles and responsibilities between Metro Transit, MnDOT, local governments, and other agencies. We need to do ridership studies. We need to do cost-benefit analyses. We need to do revenue studies, look at the appropriate fare structure. We need to find equipment. We need to find locomotives and coaches. And we need to sit down with BNSF and do formal negotiations and communications about how exactly we proceed and how much they're going to ask us to pay for the privilege of using their tracks. And then, of course, we need to do preliminary engineering and environmental review. We believe that it will take a minimum of 2 years to get through this process. And the estimate of $6 million covers all of those things that I just said. I believe that that is the entire cost of moving from where we are now to being able to apply for funding for final design and construction.
$6 million and the request is for three.
That's right, Madam Chair.
So the other three is going to be matched?
The other three would be a general fund appropriation.
Representative Pearson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So is this going to be heard in Transportation Committee also with the general fund component of this?
We haven't been assigned a hearing yet, but that's my intent.
Thank you, Madam.
Representative Cantrell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Wolgamott. I believe you may have mentioned this project to me once or twice. So I just wanted to, just for our benefit, is this typically, I guess, the amount of money it takes for most? I know there's no two rail projects are the same, but is this pretty much industry standard in terms of what it takes to get started in exploring kind of the foundations of moving forward with a plan like this?
Mr. Latterly.
Madam Chair, members, yes, I consulted with consulting firms that do this kind of work to get the estimates for the specific tasks that are listed. I believe that I'm overestimating the cost. I'd rather give you a high estimate rather than a low one.
Okay. Anything else? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank the Central Minnesotans who came down today to show their support for this important project.
Did they drive in a car, or did they ride the train, or did they?
We need the train, Madam Chair. That's why we're here.
Yeah, but it comes close. Representative Stevenson.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm here to talk to you about the Coon Creek Regional Trail Pedestrian Bridge, which is a great project for the city of Coon Rapids. It's necessary both for safety and for connectivity in terms of our regional trail network throughout the entire North Metro, indeed into the entire Twin Cities area. This is kind of a missing link location. If you look at the back of the form in your handout, you can see that there's a number of regional trails right in this area, but at this current intersection over Coon Rapids Boulevard, right now you have to cross four lanes of very heavy traffic in order to connect between the Coon Creek Regional Trail and into the Mississippi River trails that extend along the river on both sides of the river and cross at the Coon Rapids Dam, which is a mile or two away from here. There's also a significant safety issue. We did very tragically have a pedestrian death at this location last summer, and I expect that pedestrian traffic is going to increase significantly at this intersection in the coming years. The city of Coon Rapids is engaged in a very significant redevelopment just to the south of Coon Rapids Boulevard. Right now there's a bunch of open fields, and we're developing hundreds of units of housing just south of there. Important to note that on the other side of Coon Rapids Boulevard from where all this housing is are a park and a mini golf and bump, you know. So what I'm trying to say is I think that you're going to see that kids are going to be using this intersection a lot more once the housing comes in. So with that, I will I also wanted to note that the city is making significant investment in this area beyond just the matching portion of this. The trail connectivity to get from here to the dam, which isn't a part of the bill, will cost over $1 million. The city will fund by itself. In addition, there's all of the infrastructure that the city is doing as part of that development that I mentioned to the south of the boulevard. That's over $10 million that the city is putting into developing there. And with that, I'll turn it over to my testifier, Mr. Fernelius.
Mr. Fernelius.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Nice to see you again. Thank you again for coming out to Coon Rapids last September on your tour. My name is Grant Fernelius. I am the Community Development Director for the City of Coon Rapids, and thank you to Representative Stevenson for supporting authoring this legislation. I'll just touch briefly on, I think, the primary benefits of this project, both to the region and, frankly, to the state. As Representative Stevenson mentioned, this project allows for a grade separation of pedestrian and bicycle traffic across Coon Rapids Boulevard. Coon Rapids Boulevard is a major thoroughfare through Coon Rapids. It carries a little over 31,000 vehicles per day. It is a six-lane road. I can tell you it's a very intimidating road to try and cross, both as a pedestrian and certainly as a bicyclist. The other important piece of this is its connection to the Anoka County and regional trail system. So on the north end of the Coon Creek Regional Trail is Bunker Hills Regional Park, which is part of the Anoka County system. Anoka County has over 100 miles of trails, so this is part of that integrated network. On the south end is Coon Rapids Regional Dam, which is an important amenity and attraction for a number of people, not just in Coon Rapids, but the larger region. I will say on the west side of the dam is the Mississippi Gateway Regional Park, which is part of the Three Rivers system, and there are linkages to the regional trail system, which would include Rush Creek and Shingle Creek. So clearly this is an important project in terms of providing that connection to those larger systems. The other thing I want to point out is that the Coon Creek Regional Trail connects to the Mississippi River Trail Bikeway, the MRT. Some of you may be familiar with that. That's that 700-mile system that runs through our state, the headwaters of the Mississippi all the way down to our southern border. 85 miles of that are in the metro, and this connects in with that particular project. There are, according to a 2013 master plan study that Anoka County did, 120,000 trail users. So there are a lot of people that use this trail, not just in Coon Rapids, but Blaine, Ham Lake, Andover. So there are a number of people who will use this trail system and this bridge in particular. As Representative Stevenson mentioned, the last thing I'll reference is the city's investment in the area. This is also known as Port Riverwalk, which is a major redevelopment project that the city has been working on for a number of years. There's roughly $10 million of investment that the city and Anoka County are making in this area, including the reconstruction of Coon Rapids Boulevard, sidewalks and trails. We're also paying for the trail linkage itself. This request is for the pedestrian bridge, but there obviously is a trail system that needs to connect to it. That's separate that the city is going to pay for as well. So we're really excited about this project and the possibility of finally having a safe connection across Coon Rapids Boulevard. And thank you for the opportunity to testify and be happy to answer any questions.
Seeing none, but we would like something in writing about the proposed match from the other costs that you're trying to bring this in from other parts of the of a bigger project.
Certainly,
than just
very
this $3.5 million for your real purpose.
Right.
And we want to evaluate that.
Very happy to provide that information. We will do that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Detmer, you're already down here. Then you wandered back. House file 3613.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm back again, and I'm bringing to you the number one priority for the city of Forest Lake in terms of public safety. As you know, I taught for over 30 years at Forest Lake High School, and we have an intersection there right next to two schools, right on Highway 97 and Goodview Avenue. And I've used this intersection many times. Over 4,000 students and staff every day use this intersection twice a day. And with me today, I have our mayor again, Mayor Bain, Mara Bain. Also sitting behind me is the city administrator, Patrick Casey. And also today we have our superintendent of schools, Steve Massey, who was my last principal I served under. And he's here to answer any questions about the safety that this will provide for our students and our staff. So I'd like to turn it over to my testifier, Mayor Bain.
Mayor Bain.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and representative members. I'd also like to thank Dr. Steve Massey from Forest Lake Area Schools and also Washington County Chair Fran Muron for joining me here today. Today we are seeking $3.2 million of funding to assist with the pedestrian bridge over the intersection of State Highway 97 and Goodview Avenue. As Representative Detmer mentioned, this is our number one priority in front of you and is a top public safety issue for the city of Forest Lake. The state highway intersection is important as it is adjacent to our high school and middle school campuses, and again, it serves about 4,000 students each day. The intersection has been in a temporary state for over 20 years. If you were standing at that intersection today, you would see stoplights dangling from those temporary wires. And again, those temporary wires and insufficient pedestrian facilities have been in place for over 20 years. In 2016, Forest Lake High School student Katya Lohr was killed as a pedestrian as she was crossing Highway 97 when she was struck by a motorist, and action is needed to prevent further tragedy. Action we are taking here in Forest Lake. The City of Forest Lake has partnered with MnDOT for a full intersection reconstruction to begin this summer. We have committed as a city nearly $2.5 million towards that project, and what's important for you to know is that that represents 3 years of our local state aid funding. Because of that high investment in that one intersection, we have taken responsibility and have issued municipal bonds this past summer to continue with other state maintenance or street maintenance projects that we have in place. And much like our request last night for water infrastructure, we've stopped kicking the can down the road. Our challenge is that current MnDOT and City of Forest Lake funding does not provide for funding for the grade-separated pedestrian facilities. Again, so important because of the size of the student population at this intersection, and also its proximity to our residential district to the north of the school and served by those future pedestrian facilities. So your assistance today would help with building that pedestrian bridge and enable safe student crossing. I'm happy to entertain any questions you may have.
Representative Pearson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, I don't get to Forest Lake as often as I would like to. Sorry. The need is so that the transportation or access to the high school, but it seems like the bridge lands on the opposite side of the street from the high school. Is there any consideration for designing that so it's...
Yeah, if the map were actually expanded, you would see that there are two schools on the south side. The school that you are seeing is the middle school, mm-hmm. and on the other side of the street is the high school, and that bridge does then serve both campuses.
Very good.
And also speaks to the complexity of the intersection.
Thanks, Madam Chair.
Ms. Bain, I didn't understand your substitute matches.
I'm sorry?
I didn't understand what you said about that you weren't going to match
so
because you have those other things that you're committed to.
We have committed $2.5 million of our local state aid funding to this project, and because we're taking 3 years of state aid funding, we have issued bonds to replace and continue with other street projects. The overall message being that this project is of size and is taking up a significant amount of our currently allotted state aid funding.
And where is the roundabout that's connected with this?
Yeah, so the roundabout is the proposed new intersection that we are starting this summer. And the request is for the pedestrian bridge over the roundabout.
Representative Salk.
To that point, extension of Representative Pearson's question about where it dumps out at. So it's on one side of the, I would perceive it to be the most active leg of this transportation system. How do the students then traverse that? Because otherwise they're all being accumulated and dumped out on one side of a busy, you know, okay, you get my point.
Correct. Understand your point. There is
Mayor Bain.
Thank you. There is pedestrian facilities over Goodview Avenue that students use to navigate between the two campuses, and those are perceived to be adequate. Also, Goodview Avenue has much less volume than State Highway 97.
Representative Sandsteed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I look at the bill, it looks like there's kind of two pieces to this. One part is the bridge, and then the other part is the trail. Can you give us an estimate of cost on bridge, cost on trail?
There's actually perhaps three parts of this project if you're going to consider the trail a third piece. The first piece is the roundabout intersection reconstruction, and that is currently funded between MnDOT and City of Forest Lake. The portion that we are asking for assistance on is the bridge. That bridge will have connectivity to an existing trail. That trail is already in place. But that connectivity to the existing trail is an important community amenity, important feature to the project. We're connecting assets.
Thank you.
If Superintendent or who applied for the grant to Safe Schools?
The City of Forest Lake has applied for a grant for Safe Routes to Schools.
And if that is funded again, are you going to apply again?
We absolutely will continue to seek all sources of funding. The also important to note is that intersection reconstruction is taking place this summer. The piece that's unfunded and the piece that isn't yet in place is that pedestrian bridge. We will continue to seek all available sources. Our first Safe Routes to Schools request on this particular bridge, that request was denied. But again, we will certainly seek whatever funds are available.
And
thank you very much.
And Madam Chair, that last comment is very important because the MnDOT's going to be doing the roundabout this summer. We'd like to be able to put that bridge across at the same time, same year. So, and again, safety is the big part for our schools.
Oh, I understand. And it's a big part for the children.
That's right.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you for coming. Representative Bernardi. And you thought we were going to cheat you of your 7 minutes. Wow. Representative Bernardi, House File 3393.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It's nice to be back again this morning and to bring this important project before you. And I hope you seriously consider it and fund it. With me today is Steve Eggert, and he will be testifying on it. But I wanted to share a little bit of information first about this. This is a rail yard that is the biggest rail yard from Chicago to Seattle. So it has a big footprint. And we are requesting in House File 3393 of $3 million to supplement local funds to build an overpass over this BNSF yard at 57th Avenue over the Northtown Rail Yard. Pedestrian and bicycle access is critical in this area. 56% of the surrounding residents have incomes less than 185% of the federal poverty guidelines, and therefore many do not own cars. Currently, pedestrians and bicyclists must travel more than a mile to cross the tracks. Unfortunately, many take the shortcuts and illegally and unsafely cross the tracks on foot or bike to reach their jobs, healthy food, and other shopping necessities. The Northtown Yard overpass would also directly connect to the Mississippi River Trail, which is a state route as well as a national route, and it indirectly to the Rice Creek West Regional Trail. Recently, over 2,000 jobs have been added west of the tracks on 57th Avenue. These workers and local businesses would benefit greatly from access to the Commerce Center on the east side of the yard. This project would also greatly benefit the region by relieving the regular congestion on 694 along the entrance ramps of University Avenue and East River Road. The BNSF tracks are an important commerce across our state and as well as interstate commerce, crossing, which makes it a huge regional resource for our state. Crossing over these same tracks in Minneapolis are far more common than they are in the community of Fridley. In Minneapolis, before the track split at 19th Avenue, there are six crossing averaging less than 0.3 miles apart. In Fridley, there are four crossings that average over a mile apart. So with that, I want to have our presenter for our city council member and a friend, Steve Eggert, talk about the project.
Councilor Eggert, welcome.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Steve Eggert. I'm a council member with the city of Fridley, but I also want you to know I'm a long-term resident of Fridley, having moved there in the early 60s prior to the in time for the tornadoes, but also when 694 was completed, the interstate highway going through the city. As was mentioned, the ask for this project is for $3 million to supplement local funds for pre-design, design, and engineering for this multimodal bridge crossing of a major rail yard. The need relates to connecting areas of concentrated poverty to grocery, to employment and transit options, and to provide safe crossing for pedestrians and bicyclists. It will also relieve considerable congestion on Interstate 694 between highways 65 and 47. This will also provide, will reduce public safety response times within the city, which is a very long city from north to south. The regional significance, as was mentioned, the rail yard is one of the largest out there. However, some impediments also in the area are regional utilities, including sanitary interceptor, gas main, electrical distribution, and the interstate, as well as the river. Fridley is the crossroads of much infrastructure. We have no local crossing for these impediments, as was mentioned, within several miles. The bridge would connect to a major regional and national trail system for the community. The project itself is estimated to cost $25 million. The city has been active in completing right-of-way. It's completed on one side of the bridge. There's minor pieces left to do on the east side. The Housing Redevelopment Authority has already approved $800,000 to spend this year in preparation for this bridge. We've also received support and collaboration from Burlington Northern. Anoka County recently completed their study and see it as a priority. MnDOT has commented, although it's not in their right of way, they have commented this will significantly help the congestion on 694. I want to thank you for your time and consideration of this request, and here for any questions you may have of me.
So, in your opening sentences, Councillor Eggert, you said you're asking for $3 million to supplement the investment.
Supplement the local funds.
The local funds that have been spent or will be spent.
Madam
and is
Chair,
that is that the $25
million? The local funds committed is
$800,000
to start the project.
And then you said you had support from the railroad, and you have support from DOT, and you have support from a couple other things or groups. Is that support with cash or bonding or what kind of support? Just good idea, and we're with you, and it'll help us a lot.
We're in the early stages of this development and in the process of getting that support in actual dollars.
Okay. Could you give us something in writing that talks about this breakdown of our supplement to the local, and then what the local groups and the groups that will benefit from mm-hmm. this great idea, and not idea so much as a necessity that it has to be a safety necessity to get over those tracks and have a safe adventure into the world. If you could get us something in writing about that, that would so we have a better understanding of how much from whom for what.
Madam Chair, we will do that.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just curious about your selection of this spot for the crossing as opposed to going a little further north to 61st. Just looking at the map here, I'm sure there's good reason. I'd just like to hear about it.
Thinking of the site plan, you'll see that Mississippi Street is to the north, which provides a tunnel under. It's about a little over a mile to the north. Mm-hmm. And to the south would be the other bridge, which is over a mile mm-hmm. On the south side of 694. So this is somewhat in the middle. Also, when you look at 61st, you're very close to the train station.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one practical matter is where can you obtain the right-of-way in the most easiest way? And this will also bring that traffic on the east side is our local shopping center providing for food and grocery and shopping for residents on the west side, which is very critical. Right now, our traffic, we all have to go on 694 to get there.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members.
Members, this pretty much completes the bills that we're going to hear and be reminded about from the past. And next week we're going to start a new phase. It's possible we will still have one more meeting where we will hear some bills that somehow are stuck up at the revisor's office. But I don't know if there's very many of those, because I don't think there are, and we have no new money. But we're going to start our procedure of decompression next week, and I'd like to invite someone from DNR and someone from PCA to visit with me today. Sometime today because we had questions. I have questions left over from last night. And with that being said, thank you for phase 1, and now we're on to phase 2. This meeting is adjourned.